Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Welcome to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad that you're here. You know, here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about the businesses. We like the business of business, actually, and that can cover everything from leadership to how to do sales to customer service to just business principles in general. I want to talk to you today, though, about something that at first may seem unrelated to business, but really is not. The first sales school I ever attended, I was 18 years old, and it was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was training to sell Bibles door-to-door. And if you've never done door-to-door sales, you don't know the meaning of humility, I can tell you that. Until you do that once or twice. I'm sure glad I never made a living doing that, but it was a great experience back at the time of doing it. One of the techniques they taught us then was something we call the friendly act. And here's how it works. You know, you go up to a door and you knock on the door, and the person that comes to the door is very, very rude, perhaps even obnoxious to you for being on their front porch. Of course, what you would do is turn and begin to leave. But just as you began to leave, you'd sort of turn around and say, "Hey, I hate to bother you, but said, you know, it's very hot out here. Is there any way? I hate to ask, but is there any way I could get a drink of water from you?" And here's the deal: if they got you the drink of water, now they didn't always get you one, I'll tell you that. But if they went and got you the drink of water, when they brought you the glass of water back, their attitude toward you was noticeably different. They were much friendlier to you. And that goes to the heart of how God wired us up. It is just about impossible to do something nice for someone and continue to have bad feelings about them. Now, you can actually test this yourself. The next time you're really mad at somebody, your wife or one of your kids or whatever, or an employee, do something nice for them. I mean, and I don't mean just say something nice. Do something nice. Go get them something or buy them something or whatever. Do something nice for them. And then just evaluate your own attitude after you do it. What you'll find is your attitude towards them has changed. Now, why that happens, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I can't tell you. I just tell you that it does. We're wired up that way. You know, we are naturally wired to serve other people. And we find fulfillment in life by serving other people. I'm in an organization, our company EMA, our website, by the way, is emainc.net. But our company EMA, we're a fairly substantial in the electronic motor drive business field service operation. We do field service all over the country, actually. In fact, sometimes all over the world. And I grew up in the field service world doing a lot of that. You know, field service is a very emotionally satisfying occupation. And here's why. You go somewhere, they're having a problem, and assuming you know what you're doing, you go in there, you resolve the problem for that customer. The customer's very happy. In other words, the machine wasn't working before you got there, and they had big problems. You go there, you resolve their problem. When you leave there, you know, the machine's running, they're making production, the plant's up and running, everybody's happy, and you are, and not only is that good for you and your employer that's employed you to go do that, but it's very emotionally rewarding, because serving people is emotionally rewarding, and that's true however you decide to do it. You know, whether you are... if you don't believe this, volunteer sometime anywhere and do something for someone in a service sense, like serve meals to somebody or clean something for someone or something of that sort. And what you'll find is that you will be rewarded by it. You'll do it. You know, the Bible talks about that it's more blessed to give than to receive. And we all sort of pass that off as being, well, that's very true. It's really nice to give. But I think it is more blessed to give than to receive is just a fact of the universe. It's the way, again, God wired us all up. We do get more by giving. So what does that have to do with business? Well, you could tie that to a number of things in business. You could tie it to customer service. You could tie it to how you deal with your employees. And we're going to talk about all of that today as we go through. You know, many people, their view of life is they sort of view life as a pyramid, and those on the bottom of that pyramid serve those on the top. And the people on the bottom kind of envy the people on the top because they're thinking, hey, they're getting all the joy and happiness because they're being served. Now, it doesn't take a lot of intellect to figure out that's not true. If you look at suicide rates, if you look at the measure job satisfaction among people, and even just hear people talk, you know, a lot of people that are at the very top of things are really quite miserable people at times. And there are people at the bottom. We had a guest on the show here who was sort of a personal aide to the founder of Chick-fil-A, Truett Cathy. And he wrote a couple books about servant leadership and the idea that you get great rewards in serving somebody. And, you know, if you're employed in a company where you're employed there and you have a boss, and you may find this hard to believe until you try it, you will actually find a great deal of joy in your work by making your boss look good. The better you make him look, the better you will feel. Now, a lot of people have a hard time believing that because what they're looking at saying, I should be the boss and somebody should be waiting on me. Well, maybe you should, and maybe one day you will be. But until you are, try making your boss look as good as possible and see what that does for you, not only in your own well-being, but it also happens to be a tremendous way to build your career because you become a valued person. Life is actually a lot more fulfilling down below. And choosing to be intentional in helping others sort of flip-flops everything, doesn't it? In helping others, rather than seeking our own gain, we find freedom. It's sort of is kind of liberating. You know, a guy named Jeffrey Gitmer, who's written a bunch of sales books, the most famous book, if you've been around sales at all very long, you've probably seen his little red book of sales. That was one of his big sellers, top-selling book a number of years ago. He also wrote one that's a little less popular, I think, but is a good book as well. It's called The Little Black Book of Relationships, and he's written some other books and does a blog, and you can find him on the internet. You can find him by Googling Jeffrey Gitmer. Yeah, I subscribe to his daily little blog. He's a great sales trainer and sales motivator. But you know what he says in his little book of relationships? What he says is if you go into a relationship, and he's talking about a business relationship. He's talking about a relationship between perhaps you and a customer or you and a prospect. He said, if you enter that relationship to see what you can get out of it, if that's your goal going into it, that relationship is not going to be fulfilling for you or for the other person. In fact, in terms of business, it will probably fail because we all of us have this sort of a built-in intuition, a built-in sensor that lets us know when we're being used, when somebody is trying to use us just to further their own gain. We don't like that. So one of the things you can do, there's a couple things you can do. There's a guy named Joshua Becker wrote a pretty nice blog on this. He listed a few things you can kind of do to help train yourself this. One thing he says is to open your eyes to the needs that are around you. You know, people who need your help are all around you. They're in your neighborhood, they're in your company, and in your workplace. And really, a lot of times, all that's required of you is to notice them. Notice. And by moving toward them, there will be some empathy there, and they will actually enjoy the fact just that you noticed that they're having problems. And then do something to move them forward. And, you know, you may not have all the answers to this. None of us can resolve world poverty or anything like that, not any one of us. But, you know, don't use the excuse, I don't know what to do or something like that. Figure out what their need. Offer what help you can do. I remember the founder of Samaritan's Purse, which Franklin Graham then took over. Franklin talks about this. He said that, you know, when he first got involved in our organization, they were in some third world country, and he was looking around and he was just overwhelmed by the poverty and needs there. And he told this other guy, he said, you know, I don't know what to do. We cannot help all these people. And the guy said, no, Franklin, we can't help all of them, but we can help a few of them. And it's those few that God holds us responsible for. And you know, we can look at our own lives that way. You can't help everybody. You can help somebody. You can't resolve all their problems. You might can resolve one or two of their problems. Do what you can. And what you'll find along the way is that you will be the beneficiary of that. And the other thing is to rather joyfully pay the price. You know, and life's about investments. Business is about investments. If you want your business to succeed, you're going to have to invest in your business. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about time and energy and creativity. And you're going to have to take some risks to get a business going. Well, it's the same thing in your personal life. And part of, and I tie this directly back to business success, part of that investment you have to make is that service to others always costs something. Always. It may be money. It may be time. Could be reputation, but it's always energy. It takes some energy and input from you. And look at the price and pay it. Pay it anyway. And enjoy the return. And the last thing that that Joshua says on this is don't expect anything in return. Now, that's hard sometimes for some of us. But it's not as hard as you might think if you go into it with the attitude of, I really want to help this person. You'll get caught up in helping them. You know, in a what's in it for me, and you all heard that. Everybody's motivated by what's in it for me. That's not entirely true. That's true at some levels, but that's not entirely true. Part of it is to help somebody with no hope of repayment. Peter Burke wrote a great book called Unselling, How to Sell Less and Win More. I would encourage you to go to Amazon and buy that book. It's a wonderful sales book about Peter Burke. And it's sell less and win more. Just Google that, you'll find it. And you know what he talks about in there is the idea that when you go in to call on somebody, forget what you can get out of it and just look for ways to help them. And what you will find by doing that, by selling less to them, you'll actually gain more by doing that. And that's sort of a tried and proven sales technique that many great salespeople have made a lot of money doing. You're listening to Driven to Business, by the way, being broadcast, streamed on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Back in just a moment. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking about the idea of serving others and how not only is that a great way to build relationships and a great way to build your business, but along the way, it's also very, very self-fulfilling. You know, if you're ever, or if you are have been around people, and you probably have, who are very focused on themselves, and these are the people you know, whose life revolves around me. Me, 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 me. Something's always wrong with me. How are you doing? Well, I'm having this problem, and I'm having that problem, and this and that. And you're in the conversation, and all the conversation is them. Those are the kind of people that really do. I've kind of joked about this. Those are the people that suck all the air out of a room. And probably if you're around that kind of person, you've probably done this. You've probably started backing up when they're talking to you, like, I didn't really want to know all that. And you're backing up, backing up, backing up. Well, maybe you are that kind of person. And let me tell you how to get over that. And also, you can help your friends that way. The problem is they're focused inward. And whenever we're focused inward, whether in business or in our personal lives or in our marriages or anything else, if we're focused inward, that's a spiral down. That's never going to go anywhere else. It's focusing inward. You have to focus out. And you begin, you know, the one way to get over feeling sorry for yourself is to help somebody else. And here's the deal. You might not feel like it, but you know how much of life, if we succumb to the idea, I'm not going to do something because I don't feel like it. Well, you know what? I don't feel married every day, but I still am. I don't feel like doing things at work that have to be done, but I still do it. I exercise every morning. A lot of times when I climb out of bed, I don't feel like exercising. I'm glad I did it after it's over with, but I can tell you right now, if I were going by feelings, I'd just turn over and go back to sleep. I would not get up. And you're the same way. So we don't let feelings dictate what we do. And, you know, when you don't feel like helping somebody else, but you're depressed and you're not feeling very good, and if we have time today, I'm going to talk about that in a little more detail. Do something for somebody else. And the idea, if you're the leader in a business, take the attitude of being a servant leader. It was in 1970 that a guy named Robert Greenleaf came up with a term that he dubbed servant leadership. And you've heard a lot about that. A number of people have written books about it. And if you've been around, if you attend any kind of business conferences or sales conferences or things of that sort, you've probably heard that term bandied about by a lot of people. But it originated in 1970 with a guy named Robert Greenleaf. And he listed 10 characteristics of a servant leader. Actually, I'm getting this from a guy named Larry Spears, who sort of interpreted Greenleaf's work. And here's what, and I don't know that, I don't know if this is Greenleaf's order or Spears' order, but regardless, this is the order. These are the 10 characteristics they list of a servant leader. The first one's listening. This is one all of us probably have a problem with, frankly. I do. And it's something I have tried to discipline myself to do. You know, I had a pastor out in Texas was out there, a pastor of a very large church out there. And a number of us noted that, and this, again, he had thousands and thousands of members of his church, and his time was quite limited that he could give to any one person. But if you ever did get a chance to talk to him, even for a few moments at some gathering or something, the time he was talking to you, it was a great skill. He concentrated wholly on you while he was talking to you. And several of us commented, he had the ability to make you feel very important while he was talking to you. You know, that's something you can do to anybody. You can make them feel important by concentrating on them when they're talking. Now, some of you could laugh and say, well, I would do that to my wife, but she never stops. Well, fine. But nonetheless, when you're dealing with people, especially in business, you know, this is when you're not looking around. You've all been at parties and you do this. Some guy's talking to you, but his eyes are flitting around to see who is more important than you in the room he could be talking to, right? You've all probably both been a recipient of that. And honestly, if you really draw back and admit it, you've probably done that. But that's disdainful of the person you're talking to. And servant leaders don't disdain people. They concentrate on the people they're talking with. They, as John Maxwell would say, they add value to them. They make them feel important. It's the idea of listening to somebody. The other characteristic of a servant leader is empathy. Empathy. It's to try to understand. You know, we had talked a few weeks ago in a program here that one way to deal with conflict is to seek to understand, then to advocate. In other words, if you're arguing with somebody, but, you know, we get that backwards, don't we? We advocate first and then hope they understand. But a much more profitable way of handling things like that is to understand first. Listen to what they're saying. You don't have to agree with them. You don't have to agree with them. Listen to what they're saying and try to understand why they think what they think. And then advocate. But that's a mark of a servant leader. It's someone that has empathy for someone. You empathize with their position. Even if you don't agree with it, you try to understand it. You try to understand it. Again, a great mark of a servant-type leader. Another mark of a servant leader that both Greenleaf and Larry Spears come up with is the idea of healing. This is a strange thing to say about in a business environment, isn't it? We kind of get listening. A good leader should be a good listener. They should have empathy for their employees and customers and colleagues and so forth. But the idea of healing. But, you know, we can heal each other. And a lot of people have very broken spirits. And you have been around people, and you can probably think of someone right now that you've been around who had a very broken spirit. They've gone through some terrible things in their life, things that you haven't gone through. And this may all marry in with empathy, to try and empathize with them. But even better than empathizing is to attempt to try to heal them. It's part of being human, isn't it? To sometimes just be around people that are deeply wounded about things, and it may be something you've been through yourself. Is that? But a servant leader tries to heal that. I've been surprised in my own life a number of times when people would come to me with very deep problems. And these have been both employees and friends and others and family. And they would go over a problem with me that I really had no idea how to resolve that problem. I mean, it was totally out of my depth. But yet in the end, they would tell me, or perhaps later tell me, how much I helped them. And you know, all I did was listen to them. That's all I did, was listen to them and care. And that's a healing. Well, servant leaders heal people. The fourth thing that Spears and Greenleaf say a servant leader has is awareness. You know, we, and as we lead things, we can get so caught up in ourselves, in our own ambitions and goals and our own day-to-day task, we can become blissfully unaware of what's around us. You know, that's a real problem in a business. In any level, it's unaware. You know, if you're not, I mean, you could put that in something as crass as a financials. If you're not aware of the financials of your business, if you aren't aware of how you're doing, if you aren't aware that you're losing money in a certain area of your business, that's all being aware. That's terrible stewardship and management of your business. That's not doing your job. You need to be aware of those kinds of things. You can also be completely clueless to the condition of people that work for you and around you. To not be aware that there's a lot of tension in your office there. There's a lot of negativity in your office. Servant leaders don't stand aloof from things like that. They're aware. They stay there. So here, so we're on number four here of 10. It's the first one it said was listening, then empathy, healing, awareness, and we've got a few more to go through, and we'll be doing that as we go. You're listening to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hang around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. By the way, visit us at eddiemayfield.com. That's E-D-D-I-E. Mayfield, just like the milk on, that's not me, .com, eddiemayfield.com. We have a number of blogs or interesting things. You can contact the program and have podcasts of the programs. Our podcasts are also on iTunes. You can check us out there. Talking about service as a as a business, and perhaps even to draw that back, it would be a bit more clear to say serving others as a business practice, as a leadership practice, as a personal practice in everything of your life. And I had started off by saying that God wired us to serve other people. We find great fulfillment in that. And really, honestly, the great thing about it, it's also a great formula for success in business. It honestly is. It's how you build long-term relationships with customers, where they feel that you care about them, and they want to be around you. They want to be around you. Think about this. Who do you want to be around? Who do you care to be around? People who are aloof about you and don't give a rip about you? That's the kind of person you want to do business with? Or business with someone who, even though they're very professional in what they do and very good at what they do, they're humble about it. They're humble about it, and they treat you as a person of respect and they show perhaps even deference to you, and that's a rewarding thing. It adds value to you. All right, we were going over right before the break. I was going over the 10 characteristics of a servant leader by a guy named Larry Spears, and we'd covered listening, empathy, healing, awareness, and the next one coming up was persuasion. And persuasion as opposed to bullying or shoving people around. You know, most of us sort of grew up, at least in my generation, with this sort of military view of leadership. The idea that, you know, the boss makes the decisions, he tells you what to do, and you do it. And that's the end of that story. You know, we great respect for authority, and we do it and all that. The truth of the matter is, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't even work that way in the military. There's a great saying, a friend of mine from the Naval Academy told me that, you know, there's a saying in a leadership class there that sailors will obey orders, but they will follow leaders. Well, it's the same thing in your company. Your employees may obey orders, but they're only going to follow a leader, and you want them following you, not just obeying orders. And here's why. What happens when you're not there? When you're not there, what happens in that business? If you've got a bunch of order followers and you're running everything, and these people aren't making decisions, they aren't geared into the business, they don't share your vision, and you're not there, what do? Well, they probably, depending on what kind of leader you are, and I've both worked for and been around people like this, they don't do anything because they're so afraid of what you might do to them if they make the slightest mistake. Well, that's not a way to run a company. That is not the way to run a company. It's a very unfulfilling way to run a company. And if you're running one like that, I can almost guarantee you're unhappy in the business. Much better way is to use persuasion. And that may mean that you're going to have to go to something that all of us, probably all motivated people and driven people, absolutely despise and hate, and it's process. You may have to slow down and go through a process. And what I mean by that is this. You know, if you've got a new idea for a new product in your company, or a new marketing push, or a new service you're going to offer and all that, if you just come in and tell everybody it's what we're going to do, many of them will try to do it because, you know, they're good employees. They will try to do what you say, but they will not really, they haven't really bought into it in all likelihood. They're just doing it because you told them to. So much better scenario. If instead of doing that, you get them all in a room and you say, look, here's what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking that we should do this, and you give your reasons why. And then you solicit feedback, and you preferably have got a culture there where people will talk back to you. They're not afraid of you. And they'll say, well, that's a good idea, but what about this? We're going to have that happen. And you say, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And so you discuss it. And pretty soon, if it goes the way it should, when you leave that meeting, it's no longer just your vision and your idea. It's our vision and our idea. And now everybody's aboard with it. And it runs a lot better. That's when you're not there, it's still getting done because that's everybody's bought into it. Well, that's what good leaders do. They persuade. They don't bully and order people around. They persuade. And they persuade in very strategic ways and in humble ways because they're there to serve the people that we do that. You know, in what I think is one of the best leadership books ever written, the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and we've had the co-author of that on our Charlie Winslow on the program here. Maxwell talks in there, and this is not unique necessarily with him, but it's just he does it very well. He talks about the difference in positional leadership as opposed to other higher forms of leadership. You know, you can be at your office, you can suddenly be, you are the supervisor, let's say, whatever. You're office manager. You're given a title. You're the owner of the company, or you're the president, whatever title you want to give yourself. And by that title, there's a certain amount of leadership implied by the title, isn't there? Like if I were to visit anywhere and they say, well, so-and-so over here is the president of the company, I'm going to accede some leadership to that guy just because he is the president of that company, and okay, fine, that's it. But here's the deal. That's the lowest form of leadership. And it may be where you start. Maybe you have nothing else. You know, you don't have any, maybe you just got, you've been promoted to this position. You don't really have any other capital there right now except that position. Fine. Operate from the position, but immediately begin building something better than that. Begin building better than that. Don't just depend on your title and your position. In fact, push those down. I've never had much respect for people that insist on being called some title or that make a big, big idea of being a title. And I've learned even in my own company that people have asked me for titles in the company. And I used to just do it, but then I would find that didn't work to the best of the company or the individual had the title most of the time. It's not that we don't give titles, but we don't really talk about them much. We don't use those as excuses for anything. You know, if I go in and the trash can is full, I empty the trash can, and I want everybody else to do the same thing, no matter what your title is. And if you know, if I'm getting a cup of coffee and another guy wants one, I'll bring it to him. I don't have to. He doesn't have to go get it from me. And again, that's just an attitude of leadership. That look, I'm the leader here by position. I've got the position of being a leader, which means I have some responsibilities, but it doesn't mean I'm any better person than you are. And it doesn't mean I'm any more worthwhile as a human being than you are. And that's an attitude. that you need to have, the idea, but use persuasion, not bossing people around. The sixth thing that Graf says is conceptualization. And this is maybe a little hard to understand, but what he talks about is that servant leaders seek to nurture their abilities to dream great dreams. It's the ability to look at a problem or an organization from a conceptualizing perspective that thinks beyond the day-to-day realities. And for most of us, this requires some discipline and practice because the day-to-day, as you well know, will eat you up. I have said many times, we've said on the program here, that you know, if as a leader, if you find that you are spending all of your time dealing with problems, if all you do every day is go in and deal with problems, well, then you've got a problem. And the problem is that your priorities are out of whack. You know, this is not a pie in the sky. If you've got problems, you may need to deal with them. But you don't want a lot of problems, you just need to be pushed aside and say, oh, I'm not even going to deal with that. Or I'm going to delegate that problem to somebody else. Or, the idea is to concentrate on opportunities. You don't make any money usually resolving problems. You make money in chasing opportunities. And only as resolving a problem gives you an opportunity should you resolve the problem. You know, instead of going in and, we're having computer problems, and I'm going to spend all day, and this has happened to me a number of times, so I'm not above this. You know, you sit down and help somebody with a little computer problem they've got, and pretty soon what happens? You've been there all day, they've still got a computer problem, and 50 other things you need to be doing that actually would make some money for the company, you haven't done because you've been messing around with the computer. You know what it's cheaper to do? It's cheaper to throw that computer away than for you to spend several days fooling with it. Or hire somebody else who probably better than you anyhow at fixing that and get it fixed and get it down. And you concentrate on opportunities. Again, that's the idea of conceptualization. You might call it prioritization. The idea that you see a bigger picture here. You see a much bigger picture. You know, there are, if you're the founder or any kind of a leader in your company, if you're running a department, if you're the sales manager, whatever it is you do, you have unique perspectives on the business. Other people don't have because they're not in your position. You just, by being in your position, you have a feel there. I remember Peyton Manning talking at a leadership conference about the idea that his job as a quarterback was to step up to the line and see things that the linemen and other people can't see because of his perspective where he is. And it's his job to see that and call an audible when necessary and change things there because, again, it's his job. He's not necessarily the best athlete on the field. He's not necessarily the smartest guy on the field, but it's his job to look at it from a different perspective. And if you're a leader in your business, it is your job to look at it from a different perspective. The other one he talks about is foresight. Foresight's a characteristic that enables a servant leader to understand the lessons from the past, the realities of the present, and the likely consequence of a decision for the future. That's a big, 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 big deal. It's sort of very deeply rooted within the intuitive mind. Just the idea that you're looking beyond the today. You're looking beyond the today. And this may be a really good idea for today. You know, there's sort of a thing in business. You've got to keep your business going today. I heard a guy that we've used here before. A guy said business should be, it requires an ambidexterity. In other words, you've got to keep one hand working on today's business and do it well. But with the other hand, you've got to be working on future responsibilities because in today's world, things change so fast. You've got to always have an eye on the horizon. And number eight, stewardship. Stewardship is holding something in trust for another. Servant leadership is just like stewardship. It assumes, first and foremost, a commitment to serving the needs of others. In your case, it may mean serving the needs of your organization. It also means looking for other people. You know what? You can't just do things in your company that are going to absolutely destroy your employees' lives. You need to think about that. That's a stewardship responsibility you have. If you're the leader in a company, your employees are a stewardship trust. You need to watch for their well-being inside that company. That may mean that you need to be sure that there's safety regulations being followed in the company. It could take any variety of means. You should ensure a safe workplace, a positive workplace, a non-threatening workplace for people to come to and enjoy their lives. So stewardship, good leaders do that. You're listening to Driven to Business. More to come. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Hang around. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We remind you once again, it's kind of late in the program here, but if we're streaming live on biz1190.com, as are all the programs here on biz1190.com, and we're being podcast on eddiemayfield.com at the conclusion of today's program and on iTunes, so check us out there. We're talking about the idea of serving others, not only as a business strategy, and a business practice, but as a very fulfilling way of life. I truly do believe that. I don't know that I knew that when I first started in my career, but I've absolutely come to realize that as I've gotten older. And absolutely, you want something fulfilling in your life, serve other people. You want to lead a totally fulfilled and failed life, turn all your efforts to self-aggrandization, to building only yourself up. You can find yourself, number one, it's very lonely. And number two, very unfulfilled. So just a word of advice on that. We're discussing a little article by a guy named Larry Spears, quoting a guy named Robert Greenleaf about the idea, who sort of defined the idea of servant leadership. And we had gone through some 10 characteristics, first one being listening, empathy, healing, awareness, persuasion, conceptualization, and foresight and stewardship. And the number nine, getting into number nine here, commitment to the growth of people, because servant leaders believe that people have an intrinsic value beyond their value to the business. Now, you know, that's just something you have to develop. That people that work for you and that work with you, they have value outside of your business, and they're valuable people, whether your business exists or not. That they're a human being. And as a human being, they have intrinsic value. Understanding that not only is helpful to them, it's helpful to you. It'll help you lead a happier life. And you commit to helping them grow. Now, different people grow at different levels. And one of the things you have to do as a leader sometimes is evaluate. You know, this is not some wishy-washy, you can't ever terminate anybody kind of a thing. There are times when you do have to do that. But when your attitude is, I really want this person to be successful here. I want them to be successful. I want to help them be successful. It just changes the whole dynamic of that. And number 10 is the idea of building community. And that's something that's overlooked. You know, there's a great show on TV for a number of years. All of you have probably seen it, called Cheers. And you know, the opening thing to that was, it's nice to go where everybody knows your name. You know, your workplace is where people will spend a lot of their time. It needs to be a place where they feel welcomed and needed and cared for and happy being there. And they need to know that you, as their leader of their department or of the company or whatever your role there is, or just an employee there, whatever your role is that you value them. And you show it in a number of ways. Number one, by being polite and friendly to them. And, you know, that doesn't mean you can't, when there's times to say direct things to people, you can't say them. But you know what? You actually buy the right to do that a lot better. Jack Welch has always said, if you have no right to terminate anybody with whom you haven't made clear your expectations and given them feedback. I absolutely believe that. And I made some mistakes in my life in that regard. But the idea that we need to belong. Now, for the few minutes we have left here, I want to talk to you about service. And I never get tired of talking about customer service in here. There was a white paper written by Christian Grunos and Annika Ravald, called The Marketing and the Logic of Service, Value Facilitation, Value Creation, and Co-Creation and Their Marketing Implications. It's a college-level white paper, and I'm not going to read all this to you. But, you know, here's their bottom line. First, let me tell you a little story, see if you get this. This is a joke everybody gets right away, and then let's think about why they get it. You know, they said, I heard a guy say that the answer to the drug problem here in the United States is to legalize all hard drugs, but make people order them through Comcast customer service. That would eradicate the drug problem. Now, people laugh at that, and why? Why do you laugh at that joke when you hear it? Why? Because the brand, and I'm not saying anything about Comcast that everybody doesn't already say. Maybe they're dealing with it. Maybe they may do a great job with their errors, but their brand and reputation in service is horrible. You can't. You won't find, if you talk to 10 people, you won't find one out of that 10 that will say anything good about Comcast service, which doesn't mean Comcast really needs to work on their service side of things. And maybe they're getting an unfair rep. They may argue they're getting an unfair rep. Fine, but that's the public perception out there. The idea is that marketing, service, and the idea that you serve others is a fabulous way to market things, and it is the way to market things. You know, I can run around saying great things about my company all the time, and I do, and I think we have a great company, and we can say wonderful things about it. But you know, it carries so much more weight when a customer says something about our company to somebody, and I don't even know they're saying it. You know, it's the same way with your personal reputation. If you have a personal reputation and someone, and you hear back from someone, hey, I was talking to so-and-so, and he said you were really a great guy to know. Well, you didn't tell him to say that, but you know, that not only builds you up, but it also enables a relationship between you and the person telling you that, doesn't it? Because there's a third party. Well, that's the idea of service as a marketing tool. In fact, there are some people that say service is now marketing. It is branding. It's how you do things. And in this day of internet, in this day of where people, every time they go to a restaurant, they go online and rate whether they liked it or not. And if they get mad at a car dealer, they go aboard and say that, you know, they had a crummy experience there. When people are so enamored with, the power has shifted from the person doing the selling to the person doing the buying, because the person doing the buying can come in there armed with a great deal of knowledge about what you're selling and a great deal of knowledge about your company that in the past would have been impossible to do, but now they suddenly have. You know, and I guess a car dealer is a good example of this. They can walk in the door and tell you they know what that car can be sold for. You don't get to bargain about it. They know that. They know if you say this and that, no, I don't want that added on here. I want this. But and it's just a way of making. It puts a lot of power in the hands of the consumer. So this whole idea of marketing people, here's a couple of little hints for you. And this is aside from the personal, just put it back in the company idea. From the idea that how's your company viewed in the way it serves other people? The first thing, try hard to look at your company and yourself, for that matter, through your customers or your employees, as the case may be. Look at their eyes. Are you a hard and frustrating person to deal with, to talk with? Are you difficult to talk with? Are you frustrated? Do you finish people's sentences for them? Do you cut people off when they're talking? Or do you listen to them? How hard are you? Are you an information miser? In other words, in your company, do you somehow think there's some great value in hoarding information? You know, I'm sometimes astonished at how people do this. They will hoard information as if somehow that gives them, they view that as somehow having power over people. They have information. There's for sure some information in a company that probably shouldn't be public. You don't need, your employees don't want their personal information, including their pay, spread around all over the company. You need to be respectful of their privacy in that regard. But on the other hand, you know, sales figures and company visions and how are you going to do things how negotiations are going on a particular job or something like that that involves everybody in the company that really affects them, they should know about it. And you should as much as possible be transparent with information. How hard, you know, some businesses, how hard are you, is your business? Think about your business for a minute. Do you make customers run an obstacle course to do business with you? Some businesses really seem like they just go out of their way to make it difficult to do business with them. And on a personal level, for your employees and the other people around you, how hard is it to talk to you? I mean, do you go in and shut your door and just, if not in reality, at least in perception, make yourself very difficult to deal with where they can't come in and see you? Is that what you want? You really want that? Or would you rather be viewed as somebody that enjoys serving other people? I'll tell you, there's a lot of joy in doing it. And not only is there joy in you personally, you will profit from it from a business standpoint. So give it a try. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Remember, today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We're here every Saturday right here on Biz 1190, Driven to Business. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.